Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 11th canto. This is Maharaj Nimi inquiring from Karabhajna Muni. Please describe the colors, names, and forms of the Supreme Lord as he appears in the different ages. Also, please describe the regulative principles by which he is to be worshipped. And then Karabhajna Muni explains the different colors and forms and functions and purposes of the different yuga avatars, culminating in the famous Krishna Varnam Tvasa Krishnam Sangopanga Saparsanam Nagai Sankirtana Prayayu Danti Hisamedasaha. And then he concludes by explaining that in spite of its degradation, Kali Yuga is appreciated by enlightened persons as being the best age of all. Because simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can very easily achieve all perfection. Even Kali Yuga's miserable conditions can prove advantageous, because it allows a devotee to more easily cry out for the Lord's mercy in a mood of utter helplessness. After giving up all material duties and surrendering fully at the lotus feet of Sri Mukunda, the devotee is no longer indebted to the demigods, forefathers, or any other living beings. Om Ganatana Mandasya Ganajana Shalakaya Chakshuda Manitam Yenatas by Sri Guru Venamaha. The glories and function and name and form of the golden avatar are only discreetly mentioned in the scriptures, because being the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, if it was explicitly mentioned, what our good fortune in this age would be and who would come to offer it, there would be a upsurge of imposters and imitators that would further plague the Kali Yuga with confusion. And therefore, Krishna Varnam Tvasam Krishnam Sango Pankas Parsadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Sumedasaha. This is a very important concept, that those who have subtle, fine intelligence and are inclined to appreciate and extract the essence of things worship this Kali Yuga. Because the ultimate achievement of life is so readily and easily available in this age, simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. When Vasudeva Vipra in the Satya Yuga on the island of Koladweep, within the cluster of islands called Navadweep, was worshipping as Ishtadeva, Lord Varaha, with great feeling and affection, which he had developed through his years of tapasya and worship. The Lord, from his small deity form, expanded into a huge golden form of a very beautiful boar. And looking down his pujari, Vasudev, with great affection, explained to him that I am very pleased by your worship in this place which is so special and dear to me, that in the future I will appear here in a golden form, and you will take birth here to assist me. And then the Lord resumed his little deity form. And Vasudeva Vipra was very perplexed by this, because he was a very learned Brahmin. He'd studied all the scriptures scrutinizingly many times. And he had never seen the indication to which his Ishtadev, Lord Varaha, had referred, this golden avatar. So he again proceeded to systematically study all the scriptures, and this time he found everywhere indications, discreet, often indirect indications of this special blessing of the Kali Yuga. Hey, Krishna Varnam Tvasa Krishnam. The Lord comes in a form who is always chanting the names of Krishna. And he is Krishna. But Tvasa Krishnam, he's not blackish. He's golden. Due to the great upsurge of feelings in the heart of Srimati Radharani. And he is given the most direct process of self-realization, which is both the means and the ultimate goal, and is very simple. So Vasudev continued to worship his Lord Varaha in great anticipation of the Kali Yuga, great eagerness awaiting the Kali Yuga, when that golden form would appear. When Kamsa, who is a worshipper of Durga, tried to kill what he calculated was Devaki's eighth offspring. And when he took the baby, and before her mother, Devaki, he was just screaming and pleading. Brutally murdered all my sons just as they were born before my very eyes. Please spare this daughter. And he was so merciless that he raised her over his head to smash her on the rocks, but she placed her foot on his head and raised up into the sky. And you know what it says in the Bhagavatam, Kamsa, you fool, you can't kill me. The child who will kill you is already born somewhere else. But in that, eight Mahashaktis, more powerful and beautiful than myself, have also appeared. And the personality who will marry the two foremost of those will be more powerful than Mahadev, and it is he who will be the cause of your death. And then she went down to the Vindhya Hills And at that time, Kamsa instructed his demons to travel through the countryside, burn all the cow sheds, kill the cows, destroy the grain fields, and disrupt yagyas anywhere that they're being performed. He told them to kill all newborn male children, and then he sent Putana to kidnap all newborn female children. So when she was flying over the Vindhya hills, the king of the Vindhyas, who was formerly a little jealous of the king of the Himalayas, whose daughter Parvati attracted Mahadev to be her husband, and wanted to have a daughter who would attract an even more powerful husband than Mahadev, and was blessed with two daughters. So during their Anaprasthana ceremony, Putana saw them, grabbed them, flew up into the sky. And Vindhyaraj was so furious, he told the brahmanas, chant the mantras to kill that witch. And the mantras started to take effect. And Putana, feeling herself being weakened and depleted by the effects of the mantra, threw down the one girl, who landed in a river, and carried her down to the kingdom of King Bhishmaka, who adopted her. She clung to the other one, but just going over Braj, she was so weak, she threw her down also. She landed in Jamuna. And was adopted by Vrishabhanu Maharaj. But Krishna's pastimes are so complete because Krishna is Purnam. He is the most complete form of Godhead, that when he appears and his consort energies appear, there's many variations due to the different ages and the different dimensions that are transpiring. So in one age, in one appearance, Suryadev was worshipping Lord Hari. And he pleased the Lord by his worship. And the Lord's desire is that Gokuleshwari, the consort of Lord Krishna, become my daughter. And Lord Hari said, Tatashtu, so be it. And then after that, Surya, who is another, who is the ontological form of Vrishabhanu, married Kirtida. And it's very similar, the parallels with Nanda Maharaj, who is the very close friend of King Vrishabhanu. Very much like as Nanda was the third of the five brothers who actually became king, Vrishabhanu was the third of the five brothers who became king. And like his close friend Nanda Maharaj, up until the very later years of his life, they had no children. So in Raval, just as in Gokul, the citizens who had been so happy to have such a loving and affectionate king who treated all his subjects just like children, his own children, so lovingly, so caringly. But late into old age, neither of these kings, Vrishabhanu or Nanda, had any offspring. So as you know, later in his old age, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jashoda were blessed with the birth of Lord Krishna. And King Vrishabhanu, he had tried all kinds of yagyas, pujas, archanas, yatras, and giving and charity, all to no avail in achieving his desired objective. But then his wife told him, why don't you worship Katayani Devi? And he said, yes. So at the foot of Govardhan Hill, on the bank of Jamuna, he began a long vow with long periods of fasting and Mohanavrata to please Goddess Katayani. And then at one point he heard a voice from an unseen source that spoke to him. O King, without initiation into Harinam, the ears do not become purified. Therefore, the heart cannot become purified. Without that purification, the chanting of other mantras and the observation of other practices are pretty much useless. So he proceeded to the ashram of Khatu Muni at the foot of Govardhan and begged him to initiate him in Harinam. And Khatu Muni said the same thing, yes. Without Harinam, the ears and the heart and the mind do not become purified. And without Harinam, other mantras are pretty much ineffective. And he initiated them, but he told them specifically, the mantra you should chant is just what Mahaprabhu told Tapan Mishra long before he actually manifested his devotional feature and role. The mantra you should chant consists of 16 names and 30 anshin. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So going back to the bank of Jamuna, Rishabhana Maharaj is chanting the Maha Mantra with great attention and devotion. He was blessed by the appearance of Devi Katayani. And after offering his prayers, she requested him, what is it you desire? He said, having your darshan has fulfilled all my desires. But if you know anything else that you'd like to bless me with, she handed him a golden box. Which he took home, a golden box, very effulgent with a golden aura. And shortly thereafter, they were blessed with Gokuleshwari, who was born blind and apparently deaf and dumb. So although her parents were very elated that their desire was fulfilled, she didn't open her eyes. She didn't respond to any sounds or sights. Narada Muni, understanding that if Krishna had appeared, his consort must be somewhere in Braj, and going to the Brijabasis, who were so happy to have his darshan, who was not finding the child, came to Vishabhana Maharaj's palace. And Vishabhana Maharaj worshipped Narada Muni. And Narada said, do you have any children? He said, yes, we have one son, Radha Sridhama. And Narada Muni blessed Sridhama that this child will be the close friend of Krishna and Balaram and will play with them day and night. And then he proceeded to leave with a downcast heart as if he was a little bit disappointed. And Vishabhana Maharaj said, actually, my dear Narada, we also have a baby girl. But I was reluctant to show her to you because she appears to be blind and deaf and dumb. He said, show me. And then when he saw the baby girl not responding to anything in this world, Narada Muni offered his prostrate obeisances and prayers. And he told the king and queen, you should perform, you should have a big festival in honor of her birth. Understanding that naturally he would invite Nanda Yashoda. Mm. And when they came, and put their baby down on the ground, he crawled right over to her bed, picked himself up, and as little babies like to do, touched her on the eyes, and they fluttered open, and then this beautiful smile came across her face. Which goes way back in time and to Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna is just so difficult on the earth due to the calamities created by these demons who are clamoring for to rule in this age. Only superior display of love could heal the earth of her condition, being tormented and plundered and overburdened by the unnecessary defense force of militant kings who pose as kshatriyas but are actually demons. And Krishna said, yes, I will come. Srimati Radharani began to cry. She said, how can I live without you? And he said, you'll come with me. But how can I live without the flow of Govardhan and the shade, I mean, the flow of Jamuna and the shade of Govardhan and the cows and the gopas and the gopis? And he said, they're all going down to support our pastimes. And she requested that, I can't bear to see anything or anyone or any place without you. So, the first thing she saw in this world was Krishna. So Krishna displayed the loving pastimes of the spiritual world before the vision of men here on earth. He first of all caused the appearance of that infinite ocean of prem, the love of the Brijabasis, and then he himself appeared within that ocean. And after inundating the world with his unlimited dulcet pastimes, he again disappeared and began to contemplate. For so long, I have not bestowed pure loving devotional service upon this world. And without pure loving devotional service, the existence of the world is useless. Therefore, I must come again in the form of a devotee. Because one cannot practice, he cannot preach devotional service without practicing himself. So as Kaviraj Goswami reads Krishna's mind and puts it into words, therefore I will descend again, taking all these devotees with me, and manifest such sweet, charming pastimes of the loving relationships which are unknown even in Vaikuntha, and bestow a powerful process by which the conditioned souls can attain to that most elevated state of pure loving devotional service in the mellows of Braj Bhakti in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was, and then Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes and again liberated everyone in the universe and disappeared. And after the time of the six Goswamis followed by Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, Shamananda Pandit. Rather than escalating into a global movement, it appeared as if Gaudiya Vaishnavism was headed more for extinction, to such an extent that the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the powerful court magistrate who had so much influence and power but could not find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengal, the time at which the world's encyclopedia of religious thought and movements categorized Gaudiya Vaishnavism as people who performed all kinds of abominable, illicit relationships in the name of devotion. The concept was based on the Prakriti Sahajas. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to redeem Gaudiya Vaishnavism to its proper dignity. And he envisioned a worldwide movement, which his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, inaugurated. And then Srila Prabhupada actually fulfilled that vision. And the Brahma Vaivarta Purana is that pastime where Ganga Devi, as the spokesperson for all the holy rivers, approached Krishna and Dwarka and told them that we can detect that your pastimes are coming to an end, which means as soon as you leave, Kali Yuga begins, which means that people will still follow the Vedic principle of going to holy rivers to take their bath, but they won't be interested in hearing from sadhus. So their lives won't become purified. So they'll just infest and infect and pollute those holy rivers with their sinful reactions. And there won't be sadhus sufficient to purify and counteract that influence. And Krishna said, no. In 5,000 years, which is not the appearance, my mantra upasaka will appear in this world. One who worships me by that mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he will go to the western lands. And he will make Vaishnavas there who are so pure and influential that they will purify others by their association. Those Vaishnavas from the western lands will come back to India and purify the residents there by their influence, and they will bathe in your rivers and purify you, he told Ganga Devi, by their influence. So Krishna told Ganga that that appearance of my mantra upasaka, one who worships me by that mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, marks the beginning of the golden age, which will last for 10,000 years. And when that age ends, you can go underground, remain flowing subterranean, and not come up again until the Satyayuga. Because as soon as that 10,000 year period is over, Kali Yuga will resume its full flow. So Srila Prabhupada came here to New Vrindavan And in 1976, when he was staying at Sankirtan Prabhu's house, and he was supposed to stay for 2 weeks, and he was giving class every morning and darshan almost every afternoon. But after about 4 days, the weather turned. It got cold and rainy. And Srila Prabhupada was not feeling well. So when the devotees came to Sankirtan Prabhu's house for darshan one evening, his secretary, Krishna Krishna Maharaj, announced that Srila Prabhupada is not feeling well. He won't be meeting with the devotees tonight. So feeling very sad that Srila Prabhupada is not feeling well and that we would not have his darshan that night, the devotees began to trail off into the night. And Srila Prabhupada saw them leaving, very downhearted. And he sent Prajumna to call us back. And Srila Prabhupada asked Prajumna to read from the 12th canto, which we had never heard before. Because Srila Prabhupada was only up to, what, 7th canto in his translations at that time. And Prajumna was reading, and Srila Prabhupada was commenting. And Prajumna read from the Bhagavatam descriptions of the Kali Yuga. That in the Kali Yuga, people will be appreciated, but rather for having long hair. Srila Prabhupada, who was not feeling very well at all that night, he began to perk up. The words of the Bhagavatam just infused him with energy. And he said, just see, this was written 5,000 years ago. There was no hippie movement at the time. But Srila Vyasadeva, who was Trikala Gya, could foresee all this. And he described it right here. We've just heard. So as he was hearing the Bhagavatam and commenting, he was getting very invigorated. And then Prajumna read that in the Kali Yuga, people will feel it's a religious duty to travel long distance to go to holy places to take their bath. But they won't be interested in hearing from the sadhus. And then Srila Prabhupada commented again that in Calcutta I have seen that people would spend much money and take much time to go to Hardwar to take their bath in the Ganges, but Ganges is flowing through Calcutta. So it got very enlivened. But still the weather was not conducive to his health and he was not feeling well, so he told his secretary that we have to leave. We can't stay the next 10 days which we were scheduled. And the Brijabasis were so disheartened to hear this, thinking that, you know, all the sacrifice and all the work to build Srila Prabhupada's palace, and he wasn't even inclined to stay here. The weather was not conducive, and he was not feeling well. So Kirtananda Maharaj approached him and said, Srila Prabhupada, if this location is not suitable to your liking and your health and your service and your comfort, we'll just pack up and go anywhere else that is to your liking. And Srila Prabhupada's response was very illuminating as far as revealing the heart of Krishna. He said, since you are so nicely protecting Krishna's cows here, everything is successful, and I will stay for the rest of my planned visit. So, Srila Prabhupada's primary mandate for this community It was very simple. Plain living, high thinking. Depending on nature's gifts, nature's bounty, Brahminical culture, and the cows. And we can see from the instructions of Hiranyakashipu to his demons, Kamsa to his demons, and Kali personified by his own entrance into this age, that Kali Yuga cannot flourish. Therefore, Kali attacked the four legs of Bhumi and Dharma: truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. Knowing that in a country or a land where the principles of Brahminical culture and cow protection are being honored, that land will be protected by Krishna. The residents of that land will be wise, they'll be faithful, they'll be strong, and they cannot be conquered by demoniac influence. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that this movement cannot be destroyed by any power from without. It can only be destroyed by weakness within. What kind of weakness was he referring to? Weakness in following your vows, your sadhana. Weakness in honoring the sanctity of Vaishnava relationships. Weakness in honoring Vaishnavas, showing care and service attitude towards Vaishnavas. What does cow protection really mean? First of all, it doesn't just mean the females. The female cows are happy when they're milked, and you appreciate their milk and you offer it to Krishna. The boys, who are called oxen, because most people don't work bulls, although at times in the history of Vrindavan we did that, they're happy. For anyone who hasn't worked closely with draft animals, you might be surprised to know, and this is not a sentimental fact, that they're only happy when they have a sense that they're contributing to society, and because of their contribution, they are respected, appreciated, and honored. Srila Prabhupada said that the barometer for the spiritual condition of society is how the cow and the bull are jolly. Now, the obvious fact is they need to be protected, because in a country that assaults Brahminical culture and cow protection, the cows are naturally going to be miserable. So they have to be protected from the fate that most cows in America face. But it's not just in protecting them from going to the slaughterhouse that'll make them jolly or happy. They're happy when they're appreciated, when they feel like they're contributing to something to society. And because of that contribution and relationship and reciprocation, they are appreciated, respected, and honored. And they can sense it. Cows, as not being especially intelligent, and they're really not, but they're very dear to Krishna, and they're very sensitive in terms of how they are being appreciated and valued by society because of their gifts. Krishna is the best friend of all living entities. And Srila Prabhupada, Krishna's ambassador, had compassion for everyone and everything. The plants, the trees, everything. But he understood very clearly that for that compassion to be expressed for the world, it had to come through a culture that honored the brahmanas and the cows. In the Kali Yuga, due to the disease which I call affluenza, which has three obvious characteristics of narcissism, pragmatism, and chronic unrest and restlessness. Now, when I say pragmatism, I don't mean being practical. I mean what is practical for my sense gratification. Not seeing the whole picture. Because devotees, to make proper decisions, they have to see the whole picture. The ramifications of this decision on the holistic concept of Earth as a biosphere. How, and the American Indians, they, you know, their decisions were based on what is the effect seven generations on what we decide here and now. Very holistic. Pragmatism. That's what the Indra Yajna was. When Krishna asked Nanda Maharaj, what is this elaborate arrangement for some yajna? And he said, this is to please Indra. Why? Because we're farmers. Our grains and our cows depend on rainfall, which comes by Indra's grace. And then Krishna began speaking very interesting varieties of philosophy, including karma mimamsa, which is atheistic. Basically saying, you know, what's the use of Indra? He pours rain on the ocean. What's the need for it there? And who's performing sacrifice? And if we just do our duty, Indra has to give the results. He doesn't have to be pleased, you know, by karma. If you do your duty, you get the reward. And Indra has to reciprocate, whether he's pleased or not, because he's bound by karma just like we are. So Krishna was speaking atheistic philosophy, and Nanda Maharaj and the Brijabasis are just so much in love with Krishna that whatever nonsense he speaks, they'll accept it and they'll follow it. So, the utilitarian principle, we do what is best for the safety, protection, and flourishing of society. But Krishna demonstrates another principle, which the Brijabasis honor. That is the law of spiritual love. For Krishna's pleasure, the devotees are ready, willing, and eager to do anything, even if it results in the obvious destruction of the world, which it did when they insulted Indra by taking everything for his puja and doing, what did Krishna say? Just offer it all to Govardhan Hill, the Brahmins and the cows. Well, how pragmatic is that? Govardhan Hill is Krishna, as well as Haridas Varya. Worshipping and serving Govardhan Hill means worshipping Krishna and serving his devotees. And of course, the Brahmins and the cows. And it would have resulted in the destruction of the whole world, because the Samvartika clouds are reserved specifically for that purpose only. They have no function other than the annihilation of the universe. And they were summoned by Indra prematurely for that purpose. And Krishna just told the Brijabasis, just get under Govardhan Hill. And he raised it like an umbrella and shielded them. And that 7 days and 7 nights, was like an eternal headache for Indra. But for the Brijabasis, they never wanted it to end. Nobody had to go home. Nobody had to take their eyes off from Krishna. Everyone felt Krishna's eyes on them. And underneath that hill, when he raised it, to their wonder, they saw not like, you know, caves and caverns. They saw vast, lush fields of barley and grains and kuns and rivers full of all celestial flavors of ras and beautiful little residences, brand new, which they'd never seen before, all reserved for them. It was, and most of all, what did it do? It brought everyone together. For 1 week, continuous, singing and dancing with Krishna in the center. And there was a storm going on under the hill too. That was the various flavors of bhavas, as when Krishna would look at the daughter of Rishabhanu and his hand would begin to tremble and the hill would begin to shake and the Brijabasis would put up their sticks. We can hold it up, Krishna. And then he let his finger down a little bit. No, we can't, Krishna, hold it. And then when when Indra called back the clouds and the sun came out and there was a beautiful rainbow. What is a rainbow? It's a universal symbol of hope. Usually accompanied by butterflies, which is a universal symbol of transformation. It's very similar to the Christian version of, you know, after the flood. To the Christians, the bow represents the Lord's covenant. I won't destroy the whole world again like this. But to the Brijabasis, or to anyone who hears Shukadeva Goswami's description, that rainbow was the bow of Indra. He put it down. The fight was over. He surrendered. And approaching Krishna, very ashamed of his heinous activities, bathing Krishna with the Ganges water coming from Airavata's trunk and the milk from Surabhi, which filled Surabhi Kund, which is, you know, all the kuns of Braj hold different flavors of ras with different qualities, and Surabhi Kund is so rich in the quality of forgiveness, because there Indra was forgiven. After he placed down his bow, which means I'm done fighting with Krishna, I surrender. And Krishna forgave him. But Indra, even after being forgiven by Krishna, was still tormented by self-doubt. He was thinking, whenever the Lord appears, I keep doing the same kind of things. My only enemy is my own mind. And even in Krishna Lila, I fought with him again. And he was so fearful. But he knew that Krishna is going to come back. He would have another chance. And when Krishna came back, he would be in a mood which is so forgiving, so tolerant, so humble, so merciful, that at Surabhi Kunj, Navadvip Dham, the residence of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Indra prayed to Lord Gauranga, "I keep falling prey to my wicked mind. What's to protect me and assure me that in your appearance I won't do the same?" And Lord Garunga told him, you simply stay engaged always in devotional service, and your mind will no longer again be your enemy. So Srila Prabhupada demonstrated in his own life how obstacles, impediments, assaults from the outside will destroy us if we're weak as a movement. Strong meaning, you know, the cow and the bull also are the mother and father of society. Honoring Mother Bhumi means respecting Mother Earth, respecting the different mothers. You know, a man who's slaving hard all day to provide for the family may not appreciate what the mother goes through. And when she's up all night with a sick child while the father is sound asleep, he may not have a clue as to the sacrifices that she performs. And if we look at things with short-term vision and fail to see the larger picture, you know, what is the practical use of women and children? They don't really, you know, contribute all that much short term. For long term, there will be no history without women and children. So we have to see the larger picture. We have to look at the long term results of the decisions that we make. And Srila Prabhupada said that even management, if it is not based on the principles of Brahminical culture and protection of the cows, will simply create hell. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, this week the devotees are going to honor his arrival in Boston Harbor. What did he face on that Atlantic journey? 2 heart attacks, knowing that if he had a third, he would not survive. Later in New York, having a stroke. And then in Bombay, trying to establish that temple for Radharasa Bihari. You know, the devotees were cheated by this powerful politician who, even after they began construction of the temple, he sent his demolition crews to destroy it. This is a powerful politician in Bombay, dealing with, you know, naive Americans trying to deal with Indian, whatever it is. And Srila Prabhupada in his later years. But because he was completely dependent on Krishna and fully taking shelter of Krishna's mercy, by his strong determination and dedication to the principles of Krishna consciousness, with full faith that anyone who followed those principles would also be protected by Krishna, told us that nothing can destroy this movement from without. And practically, all attacks, assaults, and impediments from without make the movement stronger if the devotees are strong in their sadhana, in their relationships, in their following the Vaishnava etiquette. Because what is really the essence of all vows and spiritual principles and sacrifice? What does sacrifice mean? What does Brahminical culture mean? It means sacrifice. What does sacrifice mean? Seeking the pleasure of the Lord. When our sole focus is Krishna's pleasure, and we do what it takes to attract that by sincerely practicing our sadhana, sincerely trying to subdue false ego, which disrupts relationships, and act like Vaishnavas with respect and appreciation for others. You know, if devotees don't feel valued and appreciated, they're going to be miserable. They won't be fruitful. These are all components of a strong community, a strong society, a strong movement. Appreciating, valuing, encouraging others for the pleasure of Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, and we attract his merciful glance, then Krishna within our hearts begins to empower us with the proper vision, the proper realization, the proper understanding, the proper discretion. And as Krishna resides in the heart of every living entity as Paramatma, Bhakti Devi also resides along with him. And how do we attract her merciful glance? She's the Supreme Mother of all living entities. Mothers are gentle, compassionate, loving, and they want their children to develop those same qualities. And we attract her merciful glance, and that bhakti in our hearts awakens. That attracts Krishna. And with Krishna's protection, we can succeed as a community, as a society, as a movement. And what is most pleasing to Krishna in this age? Krishna varnam tusa krishnam sangopanga saparsadam yagai sankirtana parayajanti husamedasaha. This is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays in the benediction room, the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss and awards a taste of that nectar for which our hearts are always anxious. Chanting the holy names of the Lord, like a child crying out for mother, Mother Hara, who is Radha. In the vocative, Hare, meaning this is serious. This is a penitent plea from a repentant heart for mercy, shelter, protection, and guidance. And as Srila Prabhupada says in his standard, simple, childlike manner, and Krishna hears the call of such a devotee who chants his holy name in this mood of utter dependence. This is what makes us strong. And a strong will empower and uplift others. And it's all based on the holy name, which pleases Krishna when we chant in the proper mood. It purifies our hearts. It frees us from sinful reactions and the proclivity to perform sinful activities. And it empowers us to touch the hearts of others. And we become the menial servant of the servant of the servant for the pleasure of Krishna. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you for wonderful lecture. Trying to bring us to the basics. One question I have is that because we are in the conditioned state of mind, and you know, definitely I am not performing pure devotional service. In such a situation, when one is, you know, faced with a dilemma, then what would be the, you know, practical steps one should take to make sure that devotee is actually doing Krishna's will.
Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and the Lord within as conscience. The Lord speaks through the collective body of Vaishnavas, even when they all say something different. The overall resonating theme will decipher the will of Krishna, which, when it matches Shastra and the words of Guru, and also Guru within the heart, conscience, when all those elements are aligned and in agreement and harmony, we can understand it's the will of Krishna. And it may take time also, and prayer. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, what time is it?